Hello, friends, and welcome to Chabura Public Shiur. Tonight we have with us our beloved Rabbi Ben Halevi, who is no stranger to the Chabura, and we'll be exploring the unique figure of Rabbi Ben Tzion Uziel and the personality of a Posek. I highly recommend all to check out all of the previous Shiurim Rabbi Halevi gave with us. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all who are going to be listening afterwards. Rav, it is always a pleasure to have you with us, and the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. I had this kind of mitzvah. I have one last Zoom screen that I'm asking if you could let me in. Perfect. Oh, Hashem. All right. Before we start, just a brief note for those who need the source sheet. The source sheet is available at shiviti.org/Habura, Habura. You could click the source sheet over there. If somebody has the direct link to the actual source sheet, I'm sure you're welcome to post it into the comment section.
I just posted it right now as well.
Thank you so much. So thank you to Ohad for the beautiful introduction. And again, it's good to be finally back here. It's been a long time since I last sat in person and learned with you live. I very much appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to learn together. And today's shiul is part of a two-part shiul, one this Wednesday, and one next Wednesday. So we'll do the first half today, the second half next week. And again, I want to start with a bracha. Thanks to all of you learning with me. To Harav Dweck, who stands at the head, and all of those who are involved in running this beautiful organization, the Spoons of Hashulchan. We can. Am Yisrael is still in the middle of a war. And with your permission, I just want to say a short prayer for the soldiers of the State of Israel. They should go home, come home in peace with Hashem. העומדים במשמר ארצנו והעדר ונגבו לבנון, ועד מדבר מצרים, ומן הים הגדול, עד לבר והבבשה, באוויר ובים, ובכללם תלמידי, ובני קהילתנו, יתן לה' את אויבינו הקמים עלינו גפים לפניהם. הקדוש ברוך הוא ישמור וזית חיילנו קוצרה וצוגם, כל נגע ומחלה, וישלח ברכה והצלחה בכל מעשה ידיהם, ודבר שונאינו תחתיהם, ויתרם בכתר ישועה ויתר לניצחון. וגם בהם הכתוב, כי ה' אלוהיכם, ההולך עמכם, להילחם לכם עם אויביכם, ושיעתכם, ונאמר אמן.
Amen.
Today's shiur is going to be about the personality of a posek. In particular, that of Rabbi Ben Tzion Meir Chai Uziel, Harav Uziel, who I'm sure is no stranger to the people who study here in the Chabura, as well as the writings of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, who's going to be the one shedding light on the methodology of Harav Uziel. What is the connection between the two? Harav Uziel was the rabbi of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi. Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, aside from having studied in Yeshivat Porat Yosef, was also later in his life the secretary of Harav Uziel. Harav Uziel had a few secretaries throughout his life, but Rabbi Chaim David Halevi was very, very close on a personal level to Harav Uziel, and therefore was able to share with us certain insights and ideas into the way that Harav Uziel thinks or thought that perhaps other people don't have the opportunity to. Kind of reminds me, when you study the writings of Rabbeinu Avraham ben HaRambam, the son of the Rambam, and you can learn Rambam from many people, but when you learn the Rambam from the son of the Rambam, all of a sudden you're reading a commentary in the Torah and it says, "My father, Zichrono Livracha, told me," or, "I heard in the Beit HaMidrash from my grandfather, from my father." That kind of insight that you have from a person who's intimately familiar with the Chacham, who they're speaking about, is something very unique. It's not something you find always. I can think, for example, those of you who study with Harav Dweck, I'm sure he shares with you often stories of Chacham Avodei Yosef that he experienced personally. And that's something that you don't get out of a book. You don't get that in an article. You can only get that from someone who spent time with that Chacham. Today in the morning, I had a brief exchange with Rabbi Abe Fa'ur, Shalom and be well. It's very special for me every time I have a question in the writing of his father, Alav Shalom, to be able to reach out to someone who knew in the ins and outs, the inner workings of such a personality, and to ask a question and to get an answer. So for today, I wish to focus on Harav Uziel, but through the lens of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi. And then before I start, one final disclaimer. The disclaimer is that when we get into a persona, today we're studying the writings of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi as he discusses his rabbi Harav Uziel. When you learn a piece of Torah from someone, you don't have to agree with everything you hear, everything you read. You can even study things. I know some people might, this might be very, very difficult for them. You can even study things you don't agree with. Haikar, that when you're studying that, you put yourself into the shoes of the person writing it. There's a famous Chacham of Ashkenaz who once told the man who didn't believe in the divinity of the Torah. So it doesn't matter whether you believe the Torah is divine or not. But when you are reading the Torah, you should read it as if it's a divine book, because according to you, whoever wrote the Torah believed it was a divine book. Same here, we're reading something from Rabbi Chaim David HaLevi. I'm certain there are some points, some halachic stances that we're not going to agree with Rabbi Uziel about. It doesn't matter. Right now, we're putting ourselves here in this place, and Bezrat Hashem, our own opinions and ideas will come out when we publish our own Sefarim Bezrat Hashem. When I was in London in 2022, I taught a shiur, accept the truth from whoever says it. And there I mentioned this Rambam that's on page one of my source sheet. I see I forgot to number the Rambam. The Rambam, the laws of Talmud Torah, warns us about the importance of studying Torah from a person who is worthy of studying Torah from. The first halakha actually tells us about the importance of teaching Torah only to students who are fitting to teach Torah to. En melamedim divrei Torah el letalmid hagun na'e b'maasav. You only teach Torah to a good student who is also good in their actions. The Rambam then tells us in source bet, v'chen harav sheino holech b'derech Torah. If there is a chacham, a rabbi, who does not walk on a proper path. I know this might seem interesting to some because we assume that all talmidei chachamim are good people, but as Mori Harav Peretz once told me, we live in a very special generation where we have tremendous talmidei chachamim who lack any shred of Yirat Shamayim. People that are very knowledgeable in Torah, but have absolutely no good character to them. If there is a talmid chacham, theoretically, who has no good midot, afal pi shechacham gadol hu, even though he's a great chacham, v'chol ha'am tzarichino, and the whole nation needs him, en mitlamedin b'men, we do not study Torah from him. Ad she'achzor lamutav, until he does teshuvah, she'ne'emar, like it says, ki sifte kohen yishmeru da'at, v'torah yivakshu mipihu, because the lips of a kohen will protect knowledge, v'torah yivakshu mipihu, that's when they should accept Torah from him, ki malach Adonai tzevot hu, for he is an angel of God. Lamu chachamim, our sages say, im domeh harav, the malach Adonai tzevot, if the angel, if the rabbi is similar to the angel of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Torah yivakshu mipihu, they should learn Torah from him. V'im lav, and if not, Ali vakshu Torah mipihu, they should not study Torah from him. It is impossible, teach us our chachamim, to divorce the personality of a chacham from the teachings that he gives the world, or she gives the world. And this is something that is often overlooked. You know, I see many times people quote different chachamim, especially in books of halakha, this posek, that posek, this rabbi, that rabbi. It's very clear to me that the chacham who is a strict person, who is an inconsiderate person, a cruel person, not a person who is very sensitive, that their piskei halakha, their teachings of Torah, almost always come out in the area of it's better not to, you should be straight, it doesn't matter what you're going to lose. That whole personality comes to light in the piskei halakha of that person. Often you'll find that the person who's very kind and compassionate and generous and sincere is the one who's, that personality comes out in their writings of halakha. And there's so many very interesting piskei halakha that people are sometimes confused by. And then you look for a moment and say, do you understand truly the personality of the person who wrote this? Because if you understood who they were, you wouldn't have the questions, both positive or negative, on this person. And my thesis, and that of Rabbi Chaim David HaLevi, in this entire Shiur series, both this week and next week, is that you cannot divorce the personality from the Pusik. The Chacham is always going to have inside of their teachings who they are. And that's why our Chachamim warned us, do not learn Torah from somebody who's not a good person. What do you mean, do not learn Torah? It's just Torah. I'm learning Torah. I'll take what I want, throw away what I don't want. Then the answer is that you're probably not going to be able to recognize just how deep their bad character penetrates the Torah teachings that you're absorbing from them, even in the nuance, even in the subtleties of the Torah. You're always going to walk away having been influenced by the negativity of a chacham who is not good. And it's something that I think is a musar haskel, something we can learn from all of us to make sure that the people we study Torah with and here is not a problem. And this bit of Midrash is not a problem. Not just that they are competent Torah scholars, but they are kind people, that they are good people. And this leads us exactly to the essay of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi in his book Aserech HaRav. Unfortunately, this series seems to be out of print. I tried to buy numerous copies in recent years, and it's not something I'm able to find. In general, the writings of Rav Uziel are difficult to find. Rabbi Chaim David Halevi has made a little bit of a comeback. He's made a comeback, though only a partial comeback. You see, in the religious Zionist world in Israel, these denominations are not mine. That's what people self-identify. There was a desire in recent years, how can we study halakha from poskim that are not Zionists? So let's go look for a posek who is Zionist. And in the digging of the archives, they discovered, wow, there was this rabbi lived not so long ago when he was alive. Most of us ignored him. Then he wrote books in halakha. And so his works in recent years have been republished, all of his works in halakha. But come his works in thought, and the way he approached the world in machshava and his hashkafat olam, and the way that he viewed society, all of those books have remained unpublished because we only want to take what we want to take, and we don't want to take the things we don't want to take. One rabbi who really brought Harav Uziel and Rabbi Chaim David Halevi to the consciousness of the English-speaking world is Rabbi Mark Angel. And he published a very special work on Harav Uziel. One day, B'ezrat Hashem, this book will be back in print. From what I understand right now is that it's not. Loving Truth and Peace, the Grand Religious Worldview of Rabbi Benzion Uziel. And the book on Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, called Gentle Scholar and Courageous Thinker. I think this one you could still find in the shuk today, in the market. Both of these books are gold. And if a person really wants to understand who each of these unique Talmidei Chachamim were, I cannot recommend enough to find these books, read them, know them, and they will open your eyes and your heart. Let's read. Page one. Quoting a teshuvah here from the series Aser HaRav, volume 8, Siman Tzadizai, 97. Rabbi Chaim David Halevi titles this essay, Pesikat Halakha, the ruling of Halakha, the word posek, means, what does the word posek mean? I actually don't know the etymology, though, in terms of how long we've been using this word, the Sfaradim use this word, the Ashkenazim use this word, but the meaning, when we say posek, what does it mean? You're allowed to unmute yourself. Or don't. Posek is the Hebrew word Chotech, to cut, to decide. English, the word decisor, someone who is decisive and is able to make decisions in halakha. You know, today you go to a rabbi, you ask a rabbi a halakha question. How does the rabbi answer your halakha question? It's better not to. Or, you know, there's a machloket, you should maybe be strict about it. Or, you know, there are many opinions, I don't want to stick my head between the great mountains. You know, that's usually when you ask someone a halakha question, this is how they answer. I once heard from the French Sephardic philosopher Chacham Manitou. He said, you know, a posek is somebody who is decisive. He says, Mishnah tells us, Aser HaRav, make for yourself a rabbi, v'histaleg. Ohad, people are able to unmute themselves in this classroom, or they're all unmute?
They're able to unmute.
Yeah. No, the Mishnah. Aser HaRav, make for yourself a rabbi, v'histaleg.
V'histaleg me'asafek.
V'histaleg me'asafek. Thank you, Achen. And you will avoid any kind of doubt. So, meaning having a rabbi means that when you ask a question, you will not get an answer that is full of doubt. So today, we don't have poskim. We have sfekot. I don't know what we have. The rabbi is not a posek, he's a safek. Everything you ask him, he doesn't know. And here we have the same problem. There are people in the world that are not decisive, but here Harav Uziel is a posek. And his pesikat halakha is very much influenced, says Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, by Ahavat Yisrael, by the love of the Jewish people. And Chaim David Halevi wants to show us the Pisikat Halakha of Avat Yisrael in Mishnat Harav Ben Zion Uziel. Let's read. L'chora ha'nosei asher he'emadu l'biru. Seemingly, says Rabbi Chaim David Halevi, this topic, which we have come to clarify, and by the way, as I was researching this essay, mamash last night, or I remember it was a few nights ago, I discovered that Rabbi Angel, of all people, I should mention him, Letova, again, I'll mention Letova, he translated this essay in one of the journals in the East Coast into English. So if you'd like to find it in English, you're able to find this essay in English. This topic which I brought up, in the way in which I brought it up, that Pesikat Halacha and Ahavat Yisrael are intertwined, hu absur, that's not a Hebrew word, but it means it's absurd. What connection is there between the love of your Jewish people and ruling halakha? You rule halakhot based on principles and fundamentals of halakha. An analysis of those things. What is the connection between halakha and ahavat Yisrael? But anyone who knew from close, Harav Uziel, you know, my practice is not to call anybody Maran, except for the Shulchan Aruch. It gets very confusing. I read a book, Maran, all of a sudden it turns out we're not talking about the Shulchan Aruch, we're talking about somebody else who lives somewhere else, is maybe still even alive today. For me, there's one Maran, I say Maran. Everybody else can get all the titles in the world, I only say, but the other people are not careful. For them, and for maybe, sincerely, for Harav Chaim Divin Halevi, he was his Maran, מרן הרב עוזיאל זצ"ל ידע שאישיותו הייתה מוטבעת בחותם של אהבת חסד ורחמים לכל הנברא בצלם אנוש. Anyone who knew הרב עוזיאל from close knew that ingrained inside of him was the love of all humanity who were created in the image of God. וכל שכן לישראל שנקראו בנים למקום. And how much more so to the Jewish people who are called the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By the way, this distinction is very important. It comes from the Beit Midrash of Harav Uziel. Rabbi Chaim Divin Halevi studied both by Harav Kook and by Harav Uziel. There was a famous war between Harav Kook and Harav Uziel in Halacha, not a personal war, in Halacha about organ donation as it relates to, not just organ donation, but medical autopsies and cadavers and the study of science and medical school, and whether you could use bodies that are Jewish bodies, non-Jewish bodies. Famously, Harav Uziel made, Harav Kook made some kind of distinction between Jewish bodies and non-Jewish bodies, one that seemingly you could perform autopsies on and one that you could not. And Rav Uziel argued entirely that this was incorrect, that all human beings are created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just Jewish people. The Torah didn't have Jewish people when it says that he made them in the image of God. And this is part and parcel of the whole worldview of Rav Uziel. And recently the Chavura published a book in the writings of Rabbi Eliyahu ben Amozeg, who we can talk about was the one of the most beautiful and poetic universalist Jewish thinkers that perhaps ever was given to us as a gift by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when I read the writings of Harav Uziel, for example, it reminds me there is a tinge there of the same humanism, the same values, that all human beings are precious. It happens to be that on top of that, we also believe there's a special uniqueness to Am Yisrael. It doesn't take away from our being special that other human beings are special also. ולא ייתכן שאותו לב שפעם פעמי אהבה הכנים לא פעל והשפיע על חשיבתו הכללית והלכתית. And it cannot be that that heart which beat inside of it the love of humanity, that you won't find that same beating heart inside of his פסקי הלכה. כי עד אנוכי, because I am a witness, says רבי חיים דוד הלוי, שכל מהלכי עבודתו הציבורית היו מושפעים השפעה עמוקה מאותה אהבת ישראל שכיננה בקרבו. I'm a witness that Dahavat Israel permeated every aspect of his public life. ואני יכול במסגרת זאת להעריך בסיפורי מעשיות שעיניי ראו בכל דרכי הנהגתו. So I'm not able to stop here and share with all the stories that I saw in the life of Rav Uziel that showed this Ahavat Israel. It's not the time or the place. In fact, Chaim David Halevi published a short book. This book is out of print for many years. A short biography of his rabbi, Harav Uziel, and in it are beautiful stories that he has, personal stories that he experienced with Harav Uziel. ואיך אפשר שלא תושפע גם חשיבתו ההלכתית בכיוון זה? בכיוון זה, אך תחילה נוכיח שהדבר מעוגן ביסודות הפסיקה ההלכתית. He said, I believe wholeheartedly that Harav Uziel's personality of אהבת ישראל, אהבת הבריות, of loving human beings, is found in all of his פסקי הלכה. And I want to make it very clear that nonetheless, it was not a deviation from the principles on which Halakha is founded. And here he answers a little story. Do we have time for a story? Let's look at a footnote. אזכיר כהערה סיפור אחד שעליי עשה רושם אז ביותר. So I want to share with you a personal story that really left a big impression on me. Hayezek kemdumani b'shnat tafshin tet. It was the year 1949, about. הכריזה אז הרבנות הראשית לישראל עצרת רבתי למחות נגד פרצות חילולי השבת בראשית ימיה של המדינה. The chief rabbinate of Israel, you know, in the early years of the state of Israel, it's not like it doesn't exist today, but in the early years of the state of Israel, there was a lot of conversation surrounding the public observance of Shabbat, or desecration of Shabbat, I would say it that way, in the Israeli public. And you find that many rabbis, Arav David Shalush, Rabbi Moshe Malka, otherwise moderate Sephardic Chachamim, also were very involved in how do we get the people to keep Shabbat the public. He remembers the chief rabbinate made a whole convention to protest the public Shabbat desecration of the state of Israel. והוא הרב עוזיאל דצן נשא מסע מרגש באותה עצרת. And הרב עוזיאל came, he was the chief rabbi. He passed away in 1953. So in 1949, he was still the chief rabbi. And he gave a very moving speech all about Shabbat. וקרא מתוך בכי את פסוקי נחמיה י"ג על חילולי השבת בירושלים של אותם ימים. And he read in tears. In tears, הרב עוזיאל spoke. The pesukim from Nehemiah that talk about the public desecration of Shabbat in Yerushalayim. Betzetom me'atzeret, immediately when he left this convention, huzmena lo monit la'asio le'beto. They called a taxi to drive him back to his home. Ota monit nasa ot she'tzinat yom hashbatat ha'mechonit ve'lo hayta zot ot shin. In those years in Israel, there was a shortage of gasoline. And so every car owner had to take one day a week they didn't drive. It's a, you know, Israel is an interesting country like that. And so you would put in your window the day that you took not to drive. And the ones that wrote Shin, you knew that they don't drive on Shabbat. And that was a Shomer Shabbat taxi. מלוויו שהיו כמובן נרגשים עדיין מהדברים שהושמעו בעצרת, יעצו לו שלא ייסע במונית כזאת. And his advisors, his assistants who were there, and they just heard this emotional speech and they were still on this high of Rav Uziel told us we have to keep Shabbat in Yerushalayim. They told Rav Uziel, you know, maybe it's better you don't take the taxi that's Mechal Shabbat. Vilu Harav lo sha'al lahem v'nichnas la'otam monid. The rabbi of Uziel didn't listen to them. And he entered the taxi, basbiro lesovim oto, and they were all a little bewildered. You know, you just gave a speech about keeping Shabbat. How do you promote a business that doesn't observe Shabbat? And Rav Uziel said the following words in bold on page one on the left side. Ani lo machrim shum adam Yisrael ishit. I don't excommunicate or write off any Jewish person personally. Afim hu eno shomer Shabbat, even if he's not shomer Shabbat. I am waging a war now as the chief rabbi of Israel. The Jewish people in the land of Israel must keep Shabbat. But it's not a personal war. There is no individual in the world that I'm fighting. I love Jewish people. I love my nation. It's the love of my nation that causes me to speak, but not chas v'shalom to hate or to cancel people. I have a few more stories like this, Uziel, but I'm afraid if I tell stories that you and I won't finish even the amount that I wanted to cover tonight. Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shemuel. Rabbi Abba says, Rabbi Shemuel, שלוש שנים נחלקו בית שמאי ובית הלל. For 3 years, בית שמאי ובית הלל were arguing. הלל אומרים הלכה כמותנו, והם אומרים הלכה כמותנו. They were arguing, בית הלל says הלכה is like me. בית שמאי says הלכה is like me. יצתה בת קול ואמרה להם, a voice comes out of heaven. I have a shiur somewhere on the internet explaining all the different opinions. What is a bat kol? But a heavenly voice comes out and tells them, אלו ואלו דברי אלוהים חיים הם. These words and those words are all the words of the living God. But the law is like Bet Hillel. Now, there's some fascinating conversations here surrounding, you know, this teaching of our rabbis is often misused. Everything in the world, even the worst things in the world, all of it's part of the living God. Today when I spoke with Harav Eitfauer, he mentioned that the original Girsa in the manuscript form of Eruvin is different, and I didn't have a chance yet to sit and look at what he was referring to. But for right now, let's deal with what's in front of us. Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai are both the words of the living God, but says his heavenly voice, והלכה זה בית הלל. וכי מאחר דהינו ואלו דברי אלוהים חיים, מפני מה זכו בית הלל לקבוע הלכה כמותם? Ask the Talmud, if both of them are the words of the living God, so what merit did Bet Hillel have that הלכה should be like them? מפני שנוחים ועלובים היו. Because they were נוחים, they were very pleasant, and aluvim. Aluvim is almost a negative word. Very humble, but like exceedingly humble. Vishonim divrehem v'divrei Beit Shammai. And when they would study Torah, they would always mention their opinion and the opinion of Beit Shammai. They never neglected to mention that there were those who disagreed with them. So when I first came to the United States, I learned a bit of Midrash and Peretz every single time we study Halakha. Sephardim, we do Ashkenazim, they do that. If sometimes the Yemenites, the Temanim do that. Those, the Rambam, like this. Shulchan Aruch, like that. The Ramah, like this. And when I came to the United States and I started teaching Halakha, I got in big trouble, not because of the reasons you think. That came later. Rather, people said, what are you always, you're being so divisive. Every halakha you teach, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Ashkenazim. Until you came, we all did one thing. Now you're telling us there's two different things. Until now, the Ashkenazim who were teaching you Torah never told you Sephardim existed. So I came to the world and said, I don't want to teach Torah only according to Sephardim. That's not fair. Why should I have a student of mine who was Ashkenazi, who has a long tradition of Torah and halakha and his fathers and his grandparents, and I'm going to pretend they don't exist? No, I'm going to tell you what my opinion is, but also let you know what other people say. That was considered divisive. It's better to just pretend there's only one opinion, my opinion. Bet Hillel is the one who taught us that. They can have their opinion always to mention, though, the words of Beit Shammai. Maran, and Shulchan Aruch does this also. Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim. Drives people crazy. Why is this Yesh Omrim? But again, Maran Anvatan Hayah, he was humble. I have an opinion in Halakha, but I'm mentioning other opinions. V'lo, and furthermore, Ela Shemakdimim Divrei Beit Shammai LeDivreihem. They would always put the words of Beit Shammai before their words. But Maran does also in Shulchan Aruch. Maran, when he has Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, always the Halakha is like the last one. Like we have a famous argument about among the sukkah. Let's skip the story on page 2 at the top. That's good. I don't like to skip. Masechet Sukkah tells the story here. The elders of Beit Shammai and the elders of Beit Hillel went to go visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Achoranit. Umatzau yoshev roshov v'rulo besukah v'shulchano b'toch habayit. And they found him that his head and most of his body was in the sukkah, and his table was inside of his house. A tiny sukkah. You know, when you read this halachot, you wonder who built a sukkah like that. But I guess Rabbi Yochanan built a sukkah like that. Amu Beit Shammai misham ra'ya. Af hem amu lo em kach hayit anoheg lo kiyam te mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. They argued. They said, if that's the way that you observe this halakha, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. V'chi ma'achar de'elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim, mipnei ma zachu bet Hillel likbo halakha kumutam. So if both of them, their words are correct, and again, the Talmud says, why do they deserve that halakha should be like bet Hillel? Mipnei shenochin ve'aluvin hayu. U'piresh rashi aluvin savlanin. Savlanin means they were tolerant. They were patient. Hakoshi gadol v'nira le'en v'chi nira le'ayin. What, do you determine a halakha because of the personality of Beit Hillel? It doesn't make any sense. It's either Beit Shammai is right because of a logical proof, or Beit Hillel is right because of a logical proof. But because the personality of Beit Hillel was nice, that's why the halakha is like them. But in order to answer that question, we first have to answer a different question that the early Chachamim, the Rishonim, already spoke about. The rabbis of France, and I know I'm going to say here the rabbis of France, certain people are not going to be happy. Doesn't matter. The rabbis of France, they already wrote the following. The Ritba in his commentary on Masechet Eruvin writes the following. How can both opinions be the words of the living God if one prohibits and one permits? And the rabbis of France answered. לקבל תורה, that when Moshe Rabbeinu ascended to heaven to receive the Torah, הראו לו על כל דבר ודבר 49 פנים לאסור, ומם תת להתר. They showed him 49 reasons to prohibit something and 49 reasons to permit something. ושאל הקדוש ברוך הוא הזה, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked הקדוש ברוך הוא, what's the deal? Why 49 reasons to permit, 49 reasons to prohibit? ואמר, and he said, שיהזה מסור לחכמי ישראל שבכל דור ודור. That this decision between mutar and asur should be given to the hands of the chachamim of the Jewish people in every generation. V'tiyeh hachra kemotam, and the decision, the ultimate decision, will be theirs. V'nachon hu l'fi hadrash, and this is correct according to the Rasha. U'v'derech ha'emet yesh tam v'sod b'davar, and like the Mekubalim always say, that their Torah is the emet. And according to the truth of Kabbalah, there's something here. I'm not involved in Kabbalah. V'ha'ravad katav, v'zod l'shono. The Ravad writes, and this is how he says it. Ve'im lachashcha adam sheyesh boreach epikorsus lemo. And if a person who has in him a hint of heresy tells you, mipnei shenechleku b'kama mekomot lekach ani mesupak. I don't believe the Torah is true because look at the rabbis who argue so many places in halacha. I'm in doubt. You should hit his teeth and tell him, where do we find this sentence of hitting his teeth? There's a little button on your screen. It says mute. In the Haggadah of Pesach, very good. He's a Rasha. You should hit his teeth and tell him, Shalom nichleku avotenu hakadoshim rabotenu zan leolam bikar mitzvah. Our Chachamim never argued on the essence of a mitzvah. Only on the details of the mitzvah. Shishamu ikara mirabotehem velo shalu al toldotehem mipnei shlo shimshu kol tzorkam. The arguments, the confusion is only on the details that they forgot to ask their rabbis about because they did not study well enough from the chachamim before them. Derech mashal, for example, lo nechaleku im madikin ner shabbat o lo. The argument is not about whether or not you light shabbat candles. What do they argue about? Read the Mishnah. What oil can you use? Which wicks can you use? They don't have an argument whether you read Shema or whether you don't. What do they argue about? From when do you read Shema? And this is similar to every area of halakha. Nobody questions whether we keep Shabbat or we don't, or whether we're allowed to cook on Shabbat or not allowed to cook on Shabbat. The question is, what is cooking on Shabbat? At which point is it considered cooking on Shabbat? There's never a question at the essence of the halakha. Rather, on the details, and what do we chalk that up to? To the fact, Shaloshim Shukot Sokam. The some chachamim didn't study as well as others, and therefore there's some confusion in the areas of halacha. So practical conclusions, Nikol Hana Lamanu, we learned four things. One, shiyesh ikare mitzvah, that there are fundamental principles of every mitzvah. Velozo bilvad hamefurashot batorah umekubalot banachar Moshe Sinai, uvahen en makom lemachloket klal, el afilu takanot kdumo shel chazan, kadakad ner shabbat, hare hen ikar mitzvot, shelo chala behen machloket. When we say that there are mitzvot, that in the foundations of them there's no argument, we're not just talking on halacha l'Moshe Sinai, on mitzvot that were given directly. We're talking about, even in the decrees of our rabbis, everyone agrees there is such a decree. But there are details. That's where the arguments lay. Two, betoldot ha-mitzvot batehem, chalu machlokot mipnei shlosh yimshu kol tzorkam. Why are there arguments? Because certain chachamim didn't study well enough. Like we mentioned in Masechet Sanhedrin, that when the students of Hillel and Shammai increased, that's when all the arguments began. Because they had not studied Torah properly. Top left of page 2. Machloket zo ena kemachloket regila ben bnei adam bechol shetchei hachayim. This is not a usual argument. When you have arguments in halacha, it's not a regular argument that you have in your day-to-day life. That only one side is right now daytime or is it nighttime, and not that I'm in San Diego and you're in the United Kingdom. The question is, we're both standing outside. Is it night or is it day? Is that tree green or is that tree brown? What color is the tree? There's an objective truth here. Every one of these halachic arguments has what to base itself on. There are 49 reasons this way, 49 reasons that way, and the Batei Din of every generation, Sanhedrin, for example, the primary example, has the authority to determine between one halacha or another halacha based on their decisions. Yesh klalim beruim, the fourth, there are clear principles. The psika hilchatit b'kol machloket. Every time we have an argument in halakha, there are clear ways in which we determine what we do or don't do. Im machloket hatanaim or hamoraim, whether it's the rabbis of the Mishnah or the rabbis of the Talmud. V'chen b'gdolei harishonim, acharonim, al acharonei acharonim. There are all kinds of methods that we use. The rules of halakha, how we engage in halakha. ובכל זאת, nonetheless, בידי כל פוסק יש אפשרות מגופה של הלכה, ומבלי כל סטייה מעקרונותיה, לפסוק גם בהתאם לנסיבות ולמצב. And therefore, a posek in every generation has the ability to look at halakha and say, I'm not going to deviate from the principles of this halakha, notice principles, but I am going to take into consideration who's asking me the question. What is the situation that we are in right now? What is the world doing right now? Hakitan, how does that work? Rishonei Cholkin b'halakha hayu bet shamayim u'bet din. The first chachamim to really ever have an argument in halakha, bet shamayim bet din. Asher nechleku b'cheshlosh ma'ot halakhot. There were 300 halakhot about that they argued. Kamuvan. כל המחלוקות נוצרו בבעיות שהתעוררו מסביב להלכות פסוקות ומקובלות, אלא שבפרט מסוים לא הייתה הלכה ברורה בידם, או במקרה חדש לא נתעוררו בו לפני כן. And the arguments that they had in these 300 הלכות were again not about principles, do we keep Shabbat, do we not? Do we put on tefillin or do we not? Rather on details. Details that either were fuzzy because people did not study well enough, or there were new questions that came up and they required new solutions, and there was an argument as to how best to apply earlier halakha to this new situation. הרבה עמל הושקע בפרשנות יסודות שיטתם של בית שמאי, שנטו דרך כלל להחמיר, לבית בית הלל, שנטו דרך כלל להקל. Many people have tried to give different reasons why בית שמאי always are stringent most of the time, בית הלל most of the time are lenient. ויתכן שלכל ההסברים שיתנו יש יסוד. And it says Rabbi Chaim David HaLevi, likely all of those different understandings have what some foundation. אך אנו נעמוד על ההסבר אחד עיקרי, והוא אותו המרומז בברייתא שפתחנו בה. He said, I wish to focus on one teaching that was alluded to in the rabbinic sources we mentioned earlier. We said, if both of them are the words of the living God, one of them says yes, one of them says no, how could that be? How can halakha then be like one of them? And we said that was because of the personality of Bet Hillel. נראה לי, it seems to me, שכאן רמזו לנו רבותינו את יסוד שיטת בית הלל המקילים. This is really the foundation of why Bet Hillel are lenient. כי כבר נתבאר שדברי שניהם דברי אלוהים חיים. Both of them are the words of the living gods בישראל, כלומר, שבכל דרך שחכמי ישראל ימצאו לנכון לפסוק, רשאים הם. That if the chachamim were to be stringent or to be lenient, both of them are still allowed to do that. כמובן שלא נמסר הדבר לשרירות לב, אלא נראה שפסיקה במקרים הנ"ל נשארה בסמכותם כדי שיפסקו לפי הנסיבות והמצב. There's a famous story, you remember, Bet Hillel and Bet Shammai. Hillel and Shammai were both approached by someone to convert to Judaism. Shammai rejects that person. Hillel accepts that person. It happens three different times with three different people. How could it be that Bet Hillel accepts somebody who seems to be coming to convert for the wrong reasons? How could Bet Shammai reject somebody that Hillel thinks is converting for the right reasons? The answer to that is very simple. Hakol lefi re'ot einei hadayan. That a chacham, in a given situation, always has to look at the situation. There is no objective halakha here. Do I convert this person? Do I not convert this person? It's what do I feel? A person cannot rule against what they believe to be correct. And just like Bet Shammai was permitted to reject them, Bet Hillel was permitted to accept them. There is no right or wrong there. Later in history, the Talmud tells us that these three gerim meet each other, and what do they say? That the stringency of Shammai wanted to remove us from the world, and the humility of Hillel is that which accepted us again. And vatanuto, their character, is what brought us in. V'lachen, and therefore, Bet Hillel shenochim ve'aluvim hayu, Bet Hillel who were of this humble character, savlanim hayu, they were patient, they were tolerant. Chashu anvatanutam ve'savlanutam et ha'metziut. Because they were so sensitive, they were able to pick up, they were tuned in to the reality, et chushat ha'adam, to the weakness of a person, et koshi ha'chaim, the difficulty of life, or kshayei ha'chaim, et ha'metziut she'ena to'em et tamid et ha'teoria, that sometimes reality doesn't always fit with a theory. It's very nice that you have an objective halakha you want everyone to keep, but the people out there are not able to do it. Vet ha'ratzon v'chadomeh, u'pasku lefi ha'samchut ha'mesura bi'adam le'kula. And therefore they were lenient sometimes, because they were tuned in to the needs of people. Vido Bet Shammai. Bet Shammai, on the other hand, shekabdanim hayu, who they were very particular. Lo chashu bechol hanal. They didn't take into consideration all of these factors in other people's lives. And the same authority that Hillel had to rule leniently, they took that authority and ruled strictly. And so you see that two different people, two different schools of thought, what really determined which way they would rule the halakha was not an argument over the foundation, the principles of halakha, but over the application of the halakha that is written, that we have studied, to the people that are sitting in front of us. Do we expect that people are just going to do what the law tells them to do? Did we try in some way or another to bridge the gap between the law and the reality that the people live in? And I'm certain that what I'm telling you sounds dangerous. So let me give you two Talmudic examples. I'll summarize this first part of the shiur, and I'll let you go with those thoughts in mind, hopefully answering that question. Says Rabbi Chaim Ben Levi, I have two examples. And don't be lost. All of this is intended to explain to us exactly how Harav Uziel's personality affected his methodology of halakha. Tanu Rabbanan, a rabbi's taras. Ketzad meragdim b'snei ha-kala. How do you dance in front of the kala? I'll tell you why the rabbis had this question. Because probably they were at my wedding. You know what my wedding looked like? I got married in Tiferes Mordechai bells. All I can tell you is that the Great Wall of China is shorter than the mechitza that was at my wedding. And so what ended up happening, I'm very lucky that under the chuppah, they let me stand together with my wife. But for the rest of the wedding, I didn't see that. And it was like I got married to all the men on this side of the room. I just had a chuppah, and then she was whisked away to another universe, which is a crazy reality. But that's the reality that many people get married in.
You didn't see her face.
Even her face I didn't see. She was, remember, one day you'll come to my house, I'll show you a picture. Imagine you see those ISIS war brides and you see like some guy in his, that's what Masha was, I felt like at the wedding. But I got married. Like, Kyle wants to get married, so that part we passed. But at the wedding, you can imagine that if I would go over to the kala and dance in front of her, it reminds me of a scene out of the Talmud that people stoning each other with etogim, I would have been killed. I would have taken things off the table and they'd murdered me. But here it's an explicit teaching of our chachamim. How do you dance in front of the kala? Meaning, Jewish people, in our culture, we have a tradition that we dance before the kala. Bet Shammai umrim, Bet Shammai say, kala kemot shehi. The question here is, what do you tell the kala when you're dancing in front of her? By the way, so it's not just that you're dancing in front of the bride, but you're also communicating with her. Chas v'shalom. I know it's a crazy thing. What do you tell her? Rashi says, ma umrim lefaneha. Bet Shammai says kimochi, meaning find something truthful about her, how nice she looks, how sweet she is, or midot, whatever you like, and say that to her. Bet Hillel omrim, Bet Hillel says kala na'a v'chasuda. What a beautiful, pious bride. Amuleh Bet Shammai Bet Hillel. Bet Shammai has a problem with this thing, a standard sentence to the bride. Harei shaita chigeret osuma, omrim la kala na'a v'chasuda. What if she is not so beautiful or not so special? She has some kind of deficiency. How can you tell her that she's beautiful? The Torah commands us explicitly, you are, must stay away from lies. You're not allowed to lie. Amun lehem Bet Hillel, Bet Shammai. Bet Hillel tells the Bet Shammai, the divrechem, mi shelakach mekara min hashuk, yishabechenu be'enav, o yigenenu be'enav. If someone goes and buys a new house, a new car, something they're really happy about. I just gave a show recently on the word lakach, about taking a woman. It's not about buying a woman. The word yikachena, it means we use it in the sense, but it's originally not like that. Habi omer, that's why our chachamim intentionally use the word kiddushim. It's a better word. Habi omer yishabechenu menav. Someone buys something new, a beautiful house, you're going to come back, wow, what an ugly house you have. Someone buys a brand new car. That's a car you bought, it's ugly. So someone just got into a relationship, they're getting married, you're going to come to them and tell them what an ugly bride you have? Mikan amu chachamim, from here our rabbis told us, le'olam tehe da'atosh l'adam me'urevet im ha'beriyot. A person's mind should always be involved with the people. You have to think a little bit. Some common sense wouldn't hurt you. It's not nice to come to somebody's wedding and say bad things about their bride. And how could both the words of Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel be the words of the living God? The words of Bet Shammai are built, they're founded on a solid verse in the Torah. Midvar sheker tichak, you're not allowed to lie. There's nothing truer than the pasuk says, I cannot lie. So if she's ugly, how can I lie? But if everyone told the truth all the time, I just want to say it the way it is, then human society would never function. I think there's a movie like that. It's been many years since I was... something about a guy who couldn't lie, and everywhere he goes, he's busy telling the truth to everybody, and the whole world hates him. Really, the whole world doesn't want to hear everything that's true about you. Then what are you going to do to the relationship between a man and a woman when you tell the partner all the bad things about their spouse? He loves her. He thinks she's beautiful. That's why he married her. You don't have to marry her. She's not your bride. He found her. He loves her. He wants her. Get out of their business. And in his mind, she is a beautiful person. And therefore, there's no lie here. Because even Bet Hillel is insisting on the truth. The truth is that when I say she's beautiful, it means that to the groom, she must be very beautiful. One of them is basing themselves on a verse, and one of them is basing themselves on reality. The reality is that we cannot go around denigrating people's spouses in front of them just because it's true. It's not a normal way to live our life. You know, just in general, I'm going to say something. Usually in my Bet HaMidrash, I give Musa, and outside of the Bet HaMidrash, I try not to give Musa. But I will tell you there are times that also saying nice things about people can be bad. You know, come and tell us that saying Lashon Hara is not always saying good, bad things. For example, if you compliment someone's enemy in front of them, you know these two people are fighting. You say, hey, you know your friend Bob? Bob is such a great guy, but this person hates Bob. So what are you causing? You're causing Lashon Hara now here because you're antagonizing this person. Sometimes people, I see they do it in public a lot. They want to compliment their spouse. Husband, he's the best. He's so amazing. He makes a lot of money. He wears nice clothes. He's so good to me. He takes the kids on walks every day. He, well, a wonderful person. He takes me every week to dinner. We have a date night. We hired a babysitter. Hey, man, you think you're saying nice things about your spouse, but all of your friends who are sitting around the table, they have beautiful spouses too. Good men, good women. But their spouse doesn't take the kids for walks. Or their spouse doesn't have the ability to hire a babysitter once a week and take you to dinner. And so now what you do, wow, what a good husband. My husband's a jerk. Wow, what a beautiful wife. My wife is good for nothing. Sometimes even praising a person can be the Lashon Hara. Says Bet Hillel, you have to look at the reality of the situation and not just say whatever is true. The second example. This one is perhaps a little bit less personal. Shanina, we would learn, HaChoshev Lishloach Yad V'Pikadon, if someone comes to steal something, Tanur Rabbanan, Rabbi say, HaKol Davar Pesha, over there in Shmot, it talks about all of the crimes that a person will commit. Bet Shammai Omrim, Lamed Shechayav L'Machshava K'Maaseh. If you think of stealing a Pikadon, there's an English word for Pikadon that is slipping my mind right now.
Deposit.
A deposit. So if you think of stealing that Pikadon, that deposit, it's already a crime, says Beit Shammai. Ubet Hillel omrim, eno chayav ad shishlach bo yad. You're only guilty of stealing when you actually steal, when you send your hand to take it. But just to think of stealing does not make you a criminal. Shneimar, because it says, im lo shalach yado b'melechet rehu, amu lehem Beit Shammai levet Hillel, v'lo kvar neimar al kol dvar pesha. It says about any kind of crime, meaning it should even include the thought. Amu lehem Beit Hillel, v'lo kvar neimar, im lo shalach yado b'melechet rehu. It comes to mean you have to do it with your hand. So what does the pasuk mean? Anything that you, any crime that you think you're committing? Minayin tamud omar kol dvar pesha. It means that not only do you commit the crime, but if one of the people who works for you, or your messenger, or your servant, they commit the crime, you're guilty for it also. Here you find again, the two people are learning the same pasuk differently, but their principles, the same pasuk that they're studying, both of them see in it something else. Mikan etan limon, shedivrei shnehem yichulim yot emet, and therefore both opinions can be true. Ve'en shum chashiva hegyonit berua shetechayev hachaa lechayev adibur ala maaseh bilvad. V'divrei shnehem hem divrei Elohim chayim. There is no logical way to prove one way or the other. Rather, every chacham has his own approach. And if I had to tell you, the idea of Beit Shammai is, everybody knows how to steal. Even the thought of stealing is a crime. Along comes Beit Hillel and says, hey, if we get punished for every single avera we think about, do you know how much teshuvah we're going to need to be? Do you know how many criminals are going to be in the world? Everyone who thought of doing an avera is now a terrible person. By the way, Rabbeinu Abraham, Rabbeinu Rambam, he has an introduction to Perkei Avot. It's a beautiful book, a short book on human psychology. And there he mentions, our Chachamim tell us that thinking of doing an avera is worse than actually doing an avera. You show that reality proves it otherwise. I think there are many people who want to do an avera, and they finally commit the avera, and then they realize, wow, that wasn't as exciting as I thought it was going to be. So usually you feel the other way is true. But here, Rabbeinu Aharon said, what does it mean that a person who thinks of doing an avera, it's worse than one who commits the avera? He explains the following. He says, you know, the only difference between us and an animal is that we both have bodies, we both have desires and needs and wants, that we have a mind. Rambam's whole philosophy, the mind is the most sacred thing in the world. The connection between the intellect of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and that of a human being is a profound part of the Rambam's teachings. The Rambam says, if you do an avera with your body, it's normal. Bodies do avera. Bodies have wants, they have needs, they have lusts, they have desires. But your mind, how can you corrupt your mind? The one part of you that is so sacred, the one part of you that is divine, that's the part you want to hurt? Bidorotenu, in our generation, yesh pesika beruah. There's a clear approach to halakha. Maybe not anymore. V'chen kelalei pesika mekubalim. There's accepted ways in which we rule halakha. V'af al piken, nonetheless, yesh leoto yisod gadol shel nochim ve'aluvim basis gadol bepesika. The personality of the posek still has a very large part in determining the outcome of how we analyze the halakha. Ki zeh kocha shel Torat Hashem, shi Torat hanetzach. This is the power of the strength of the Torah that is an eternal Torah. V'lo hayta yichola liyot Torat netzach ilmele hishira bidei haposek samchut lifsok al pi otam yisodot hapsika mekubalim. And there would not have been an eternal Torah if this system didn't exist, that a posek, using the foundational principles of halakha, umitocham bilvad, and only from within the principles of halakha, toch hitchashvut b'chulshot ha'adam v'tzorchav, and while taking into consideration the weakness, the needs of human beings, kivet hilel shenochim ve'aluvin hayim, like Bet Hillel, that we're humble and we're tolerant. Poskim umorei hora'a b'chol makom uzman, yodim hem ele, yodim hem elma yichavnu advarim halakha l'maaseh. The poskim, the real halachic decisions of every generation, they know how to use these rules, how to operate within the framework of halacha, but not to forget the people who the halacha is intended to be applied to. This idea is something that is found very often in the writings of Rabbi Chaim David Halevi. You see, we're raised in an orthodoxy that tells us the Torah is eternal. What does it mean Torah is eternal? The Torah is static, and the Torah is always one way. You can never change it. It's always going to be this way. But only someone who doesn't know Torah can speak like that. And the rigidity of the Torah is what proves how eternal it is, that in every generation that I hear always, this is the speech of orthodoxy. Baruch Hashem, shalom sam chelkenu kahem, v'goralenu kefal hamonam. Baruch Hashem, we don't suffer from the illness of being orthodox, and we are able instead to learn Torah properly. And so when one studies Torah, thank God, outside of the framework of orthodoxy, one can understand what makes the Torah eternal, says Rabbi Chaim David Halevi. The very fact that the Torah is flexible. I know it sounds a crazy thing to put together with halakha. My wife has a shiur, you may have even touted at the Chabura, I don't recall, called the elastic clause. Rabbi Chaim David Halevi's essay on the flexibility of halakha. Halakha, yes, there are principles of halakha. We do keep Shabbat. We do eat kasher. We do put on tefillin. We do, but there are in the details, there is room to take human beings and their needs into consideration. If you know who those human beings are, you know what the generation needs. Do, do, vedo, shan. Every generation and the thing that that generation needs. There's nice that you have a theory, but the theory doesn't work. Not for the regular people, not for everybody. So what are you going to do when your theory doesn't match reality? No. Rechaim David Halevi mentions this also in the area of civil law. Those of you in my New York shiur, Mishpat Tzedek, we've discussed already for a few months this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu intentionally left the civil laws of the Torah vague. There are principles, but they're lacking details. There is no exact way in how a Jewish government must operate. Yes, principles, but not details. Every other area of halakha, tefillin, mezuzot, there are details to what color, what shape, what size, what direction. All of a sudden comes the areas of civil law and national law. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, these gaping holes. This is in order to maintain the eternity of the Torah. Because if the Torah was going to be rigid in the method of government that the Jewish people needed, then as society changed, and as values change, and human beings change, and their perceptions of life change, technology changes. Rav Uziel mentions this in the introduction to his book, his Shelo V'Tshuvot, Mishpatei Uziel. He mentions that a posek must take into consideration all of the facets of life before determining a halakha. Because what was yesterday is not today, and what is today is not going to be tomorrow. HaKadosh Baruch Hu left holes in his Torah so that human beings can fill them. And anyone who's read any writings of Sephardic Chachamim, how we are active readers of a Torah, active receivers of a Torah, and not passive readers of a Torah. We don't just do whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu throws at us. That human beings are intimately involved in the perfection of the world. There are three partners in the creation of the world, tell our rabbis. A father, a mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, partners in the creation of the world. Our Chachamim believe in this wholeheartedly. Look at the Rambam, Morei Nevuchim, about the Brit Milah. But human beings being involved, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to be circumcised. Why were we not born that way? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be involved in his perfection of humanity. The same with the Torah. The Torah is not a book that was given to us to accept passively. But in every generation, we are active in our pursuit of the truth of the Torah as it relates to the people around us. If I could say one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, he writes the Mishnah, Pirkei Avot says, Moshe kibet Torah miSinai, Yom Tzchari Yoshua, Yoshua's getting the transmission of the oral law. And then it says, V'hem amru shlosha devarim. The Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, the men of the great assembly, they said three things. And then it tells us the three things. Says this Chacham, why is it that it mentions they said three things? We can count. They'll say three things. And we'll already know on our own that they said three things. He said, V'hem amru shlosha devarim. This is not pshat, this is an idea. They said three things, meaning that when a person comes to teach Torah, to learn halakha, they must take into consideration three things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's written in the Torah, and the human beings that you intend to follow this Torah. And if you remove any one of those elements, you take God out of Torah, you take the Torah out of the Torah, you take the people out of the Torah, then you will have an imperfect understanding of how to rule halakhot. I once heard from a Chacham, and with this I'll end, that one of the downfalls of our generation is that those who are tasked with ruling halachot are usually the people that are so far removed from society that they don't actually know what the human beings are living every day. And I'm going to tell you what I mean. Forgive me if it's too blunt. In the Jewish world as we know it, usually the big rabbis are those that sit in the yeshiva. He's a rosh yeshiva. He has students, he has some kollel, he's a dayan and a bedin, he sits all day over there in a room with books. And the small rabbis, who are they? They run the Bete Knesset, they run the schools, they run the kids program, they're small rabbis. Small rabbis don't touch big rabbi things. Big rabbis have no clue what small rabbis do. This is usually, in this very vertical society, this is the way that this works. And what you have, especially today, is very different than what we had, for example, among the Sephardim. Among the Sephardim, the Rosh HaYeshiva was also the rabbi of the community. He was also the dayan, the bedin. He was also the father. He was also the uncle. He was also the brother. He was a person who was, maybe he was the shochet, maybe he was the sofet. Maybe he was involved in every area of life. And when that chacham ruled the halakha, he wasn't sitting in some ivory tower removed from the people. Do you know how easy it is for a Rosh HaYeshiva to rule the halakha? He has 300 ducklings that are willing to do everything he says. They walk like he walks, they talk like he talks, they dress like he dresses, they eat like he eats. He has no need to take them into consideration. Chassidim, like penguins in a row. Whatever the Rebbe says, that's what they're going to do. My life can't handle it. Doesn't matter. I'm going to do it anyways. The Maskilim, who hated the Chassidim, you know, they used to even make songs. As the Rebbe sings, all the Chassidim are singing. The Rebbe dances, all the Chassidim are dancing. It's very easy to be the rabbi of a homogenous group of people. But when you're a leader for a group of people that are not the same, if you're a leader, I just told them last night in my shul, there are some rabbis that walk into the Bet Knesset, and all the people in the Bet Knesset are trying to dress like them. If I would walk into this room, and all of the people in the room had decided to dress up like me, I would run for the mountains. What kind of crazy people in the world are trying to imitate each other? You live in a Bet Knesset, you live in a community. Not everyone has the same level of deserves. Not everyone has the same level of finances. Not everyone has the same level of education. Not everyone has children. Not everyone is married. Not everyone is divorced. Everybody is different. And if you wish to be a relevant chacham, if you wish to teach halacha properly to people, you must have the kind of personality like Bettina. That doesn't say, hey, this is the law, take it or leave it. But rather the person says, listen, come, come. Halacha, Torah has, forgive me for borrowing words, halacha has a spectrum to it. There are many colors in this rainbow. There are many different ways in which to do this right. This generation, this community is not the same as another generation, another community. You are not the same as the person sitting next to you. So when a person can come with an animal to a chacham and the chacham says, for you it's kasher, for you it's not. What does it mean? For you it's kasher, for you it's not. You don't have any money. You do. She's beautiful. To someone, she's beautiful. And this idea that halacha has in it so many options is exactly the power that chachamim have. Which chachamim? If you don't believe in the Torah, you don't believe in the divinity of the Torah, you don't believe in the authority of the Sanhedrin, of the Bedin HaGadol, of the sages of Israel, so of course you'll say whatever you want them to. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the chachamim that are loyal to Jewish tradition, that are loyal to our faith, to our God, to our people. And within those boundaries of halakha, are able to make halakha relevant in every generation. Next week, we're going to take maybe 15 or 16 examples from Uziel's Piskei Halacha, one after the next, rapid-fire halachot. We're going to go through each one and show you how it was his personality as a lover of the Jewish people that ultimately determined whether he was strict, whether he was lenient, whether he was permitted or he prohibited. Bezalat Hashem, I'll see you next week. But for now, thank you so much for learning Torah with me. I will stick around for as long as anybody has any questions or comments. And my wife is giving a shiur in this Beit HaMikdash in about 20 minutes. But until then, I'm here. If you guys need to go, please feel free to go. Ohad, I'm turning over the shiur to you.
Thank you so much, Chacham, for that amazing presentation. If anyone has any questions, they can unmute, raise their hands, write in the chat box. Feel free to ask, comment, criticize.
Anyone have any questions or comments?
David?
So just a quick question. My concern in all of this, and we've heard this discussion before, is how, I guess, subjective then does this process become in terms of I'm deciding that this Rav, this Gadol, is worthwhile, you know what I mean, in our own communities. You know, you look at this guy, you look at that guy, and we're dismissing them because maybe we think we know them, or you know, we're making objective or subjective judgments about the Rabbanim in our own kehila, and you're like, this one's good, this one's bad, I don't need to listen, kind of things, in order to exclude ourselves from whatever obligations we might have. And I say that knowing kind of the specter of judgment that has fallen upon you and many other people I know, and like, I'm very honored to learn with a lot of people on the list. I believe that too. But there's an element of being under halacha, but also going, you know, I'm making a judgment call about that person, and so I'm outside of halacha. That autonomy is good, but it's also there's a sakana that is there. Anyway, I will leave that to you to answer.
For sure, that's a great question. Rabbanit, are you on this call? I see her name. I don't know if she's driving or not. Rabbanit Devorah Halevin. Okay, she must be driving. In my wife's Hasidut, there's a famous story. I know I'm not holding all the rabbis' names. One of the rabbis there It was a certain guy who he came to the Rebbe and he asked him, oh, he said, you know, do that rabbi said, that rabbi is good for nothing. And this Hasidic Rebbe says, he's good for nothing. What makes he's good for nothing? He's good for nothing. I don't like him. I'm going to butcher the story for sure. But the next day, the Rebbe came over to this man and said, you know, you finished praying Shacharit? Let me ask you. I need to go pick out a horse in the market. I need your help to pick out a horse. No, I don't know anything about horses. Come. I need help. I'm buying a horse. I want to know which horse I should buy, a strong horse, a weak horse. He goes, but Rabbi, I'm not the right guy. No, come with me. He takes him to the market and they start looking at the hoofs and they're looking at the fur and they're looking at the hair and how strong it is, how tall it is, how much it weighs. And the Rebbe keeps asking this guy, listen, the horse, is it a good horse, a bad horse? They're like, Rabbi, I know nothing about horses. He said, what do you know about rabbis? You're busy deciding rabbis like this, rabbis like that. What do you know? Unfortunately, we have some people that really don't know anything, and they determine who is a rabbi, who is not a rabbi, based on all kinds of arbitrary things. Those of us who are inside of the Beit HaMikdash, and all of you here inside of the Beit HaMikdash, I'm pretty sure you can recognize a Talmid Chacham from someone who's not a Talmid Chacham. I'm pretty sure you're able to tell who is someone who knows, who is somebody who has Yirat Shamayim, who is someone who doesn't. But there's no Yirat Shamayim thermometers. It's not going to stick it into somebody. It's going to tell you, that's somebody I can learn from. And that's why, in general, in Halakha, I once heard a derasha. Don't jump on me, guys. I was once in a Beit HaKnesset, a young Israel of the Muslim quarter in the old city of Jerusalem. I've been around a bunch of different places. The rabbi of the Beit HaKnesset was Rabbi Nachman Kahana. Yes, famously the brother of. Okay, he was giving a famous derasha. Somebody once asked him a whole question about Israel. I don't want to live in Israel. Rav Moshe Feinstein said he didn't have to live in Israel. I remember Rabbi Nachman Kahana. He said one thing. He said, listen. After 120 years, when you're standing in front of God, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein isn't going to be anywhere near you to stand up for you. You need to have the answers for yourself. And I think that in general, in this reality, we never rely on this chacham or relying on that chacham. It's do I know enough Torah to be able to make a decision for myself that what that chacham said is within the realms or within the boundaries of what halakha will permit or not? And if I am, then that decision ultimately is mine. It's one that I make. Thankfully, with the assistance of Rabbi Yosef Mazat, so Rabbi Uziah, Chamad Yosef, whoever it's going to be, but it's not that I'm relying on such a person. We don't have precedent in halakha that you rely on someone. Rather, I'm appreciative that they blaze that trail, and if I feel that's the kind of trail that I want to walk on, then I can walk on it too. Now, what happens when those trails contradict, or what happens when this rabbi says this, or this rabbi says that? So obviously, there's going to be chaos, and if it's on principles of halakha, then one of them must be wrong. And I can't mean that. One of them tells me Shabbat is on Sunday and one tells me Shabbat is on Saturday, so one of them is going to be wrong. But in those details, there's room. There's room for many different opinions. You know, here, I'm going to give an example. There are rabbis, even some of them on the list, that I've stood up for and I've defended their halachic stances, though I didn't agree with them. And some of my Talmidim say, listen, why are you standing up for him? You don't even agree with what he said. And of course, I don't agree with what he said, but I agree with him having the right to say it. I agree with that opinion is still within the framework of halakha. And as a Talmid Chacham, it says, Talmidei Chachamim marbim shalom ba'olam. Torah scholars increase peace in the world. Part of us increasing peace in the world is not to pretend like I'm right and everybody else is wrong. And I think that for people who look for definites and the comfort of there's only one answer and there's only one right and there's only one way, sure there's comfort in there. On a very juvenile level, there's comfort there. Rabbi Yosef Masas is a teshuvah. In which somebody really had a toothache, like a terrible toothache. And they came running to his house and they're allowed to go get the tooth extracted by a non-Jewish dentist on Shabbat. And really, if you look at all the sources, it's clearly obvious that a person really shouldn't go to a dentist on Shabbat, even if they're not Jewish. Like all the sources would line up for that. And Rav Masas, he said it's okay, he can go. And when some rabbis criticized him, he wrote back the following sentence. Rabbi Yosef Masas writes, "V'hamachmir kanireh lo ba lidei misayon." The one who's strict in this halakha clearly never had a toothache before. If you had a toothache, it's really nice to say the halakha is you can't go to a dentist on Shabbat. But when it's your tooth, I promise you, Rabbi, you're going to be in the emergency dentist office. That's how it's going to be. And I think for most people, that's how they deal with halakha. Sure, I want the halakha always to be this way, but when I'm stuck in some cruise ship in the middle of the ocean and they forgot to bring kosher food, you better believe that I want the Ramah to also be right sometimes. You know, I'm going to need some other opinion out there when I'm floating in the middle of the ocean. And it's really nice for me to have these principles that I stand by, but at the end of the day, the fact that there is this ability in halakha for flexibility, it never hurts us. It never hurts us. And sure, is it difficult to discern? Great. Welcome to being Jewish. Being Jewish requires work. I hope that I answered David. Who's next? Anyone else? Anything else?
Anyone else can unmute? Shami.
I just wanted to ask more as a how does the just as an addition to the previous question, if you go ahead, there is this idea that you can't uproot a previous court's ruling, but at the same time, unless you're greater in number and knowledge, but if you're, I'm just trying to understand that concept within that framework you just said. I'm not sure I can comprehend the purpose of that. If you're supposed to, I don't know if you see, if you understand what I'm saying, is that he's, that if those rules are set that you can only do it if you're greater in number and greater in knowledge, but you have to apply to today, to whatever the current situation is and what the needs of the community are and what the needs of the people are, and you have what with to rely on. I don't know, I'm thinking of, maybe I'm thinking of more of a general Sanhedrin versus smaller Bacon. I don't know.
No, that's a very good question. You're on to the answer, by the way. Very good question. One is that whole area of halakha is talking about Batei Din overruling decrees of Batei Din, which require them to be of a certain authority, a certain status to be able to do that. By the way, can a Sanhedrin, for example, decide that we are not allowed to keep Shabbat for the Shabbat? Could they decide such a thing?
No. They have to bring a korban if they do say that. I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely, the Sanhedrin could decide that you don't keep Shabbat the Shabbat.
Oh, this Shabbat. I thought you said in general. Forever.
Very good. That's the answer. It's not forever. Yes? Sanhedrin has the power to temporarily suspend halakhot, whether to create new ones, to get rid of old. Obviously, as a Sanhedrin, there are ways in which they operate and do this, and there must be some kind of checks and balance to the system, or else we destroy halakha. One of the major things is it's not done l'dorot. It's not done forever. It's not done always. I think very often, especially in areas where a chacham is utilizing some, it's not a loophole, but some other alternative way to look at halakha, it's not this is going to be the halakha forever this way. Rather, in this particular situation, we are trying to avert a bigger crisis, a different problem. An example that might come to mind that it might not be perfect. A rabbi's rule that a person is only allowed to go to the mikveh after 7 days. Yes, you can't go during the daytime of day seven. It's not allowed. Why? We don't want a husband and a wife to be home together. And it's before sunset. They already went to the mikveh. And now they'll be together, chas v'shalom, while it's not allowed. But there are some instances in which certain chachamim did allow people to go to the mikveh on day seven, even though it was contrary to what is written in the Shulchan Aruch, because the risk of not going was even worse. The risk of people just not going to the mikveh at all, or breaking Shabbat in order to go to the mikveh, or A, B, C, D. It's not they've now changed the halakha that you can go to the mikveh on day seven during the daytime, but in this particular situation, when weighing our choices, we've decided it's better to do this than do that, and that doesn't change what is the right thing to do. It changes in this particular situation. This desperate time called for desperate measures. I think those are two. One is talking about Batei Din and rules that Batei Din make, and one is in a whole different category of these two different answers I'm giving you, is that the halakha is not actually suspended. It's just temporarily being done differently than perhaps the way we usually would rule it.
Okay, thank you.
That's my understanding. If someone has a better understanding, I saw Rabbi Yosef Zernigan was on this call before. If he has a better understanding, I'd be open to hearing it. Okay. Anyone else? Anything else?
Okay.
And I can just, again, on that last point, I think it's important. The alternative, which is a system that is so rigid that no one can observe it, would mean practically the end of the Torah. If we have a reality in which halakha has no backdoors to it, meaning that's the way we think about halakha, that simply there's, we're full, my hands are tied by the Shulchan Aruch, my hands are tied by the Mishneh Torah, my hands are tied. At that point, what do we do when practically the people are unable to live up to the expectations of the law? And so one would say, oh, well, let them all die. You know, who cares? But at the end of the day, if there's no Am Yisrael, then there is no purpose for a Torah. And so this is part of the balance. Of course, we wish for the Torah to be observed in a perfect, ideal sense. And the other side of it, though, is that if the people aren't there, and this is even in rabbinic law, which is, even if the rabbis wish to make a decree, but you see that ultimately the decree cannot be observed by the people, then the decree doesn't stand. What kind of decree cannot be done by the people? And I think this is obviously what we're saying, both David and you are picking up on, there's danger to this. This is not it's not a comfortable thing. It makes me feel like all the things that I do, maybe they're arbitrary. Maybe one day someone's going to change their mind that I could do something else completely different. And what happens if bad people come and change the Torah in the wrong way? You're right. The Torah is a very sensitive thing. And I will say that the one most difficult part of this is that we are missing a Sanhedrin. I taught a shiur in the UK, a few series actually, on the need for a Sanhedrin, which is, if we had a Sanhedrin, we wouldn't need to worry. You and I could just relax and say, there's one body that is responsible for these kind of decisions. It's not going to be rogue people over here doing one thing and people over there doing another thing, or those guys over there doing a different thing. There'll be order and there'll be a structure in which this operates. I think the fact that we have this principle, but we don't have a Sanhedrin, the questions that you're asking are coming from a place of how scary it is that we don't actually have that institution in our life. And I know that talking about the Sanhedrin makes me unpopular, so I'm not going to talk right now about the Sanhedrin. But for those of you who are interested, it's very, very important. Very important to understand why Am Yisrael, even today, especially today, would need the help and assistance of the Sanhedrin. Thank you so much for learning with me, this is going to be.
Thank you so much, Chacham. Thank you, everyone, for being here. B'zat Hashem, we'll have you on for the next installment. And B'zat Hashem, everyone.
Ohad, it's so good to see your face.
Good to see you too, Chacham.
Oh, thank you for hosting this tonight.
Thank you.